1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hey everyone, this is the Helping Friendly Podcast, episode 39. This episode is going to be another Tour Conversations episode, and we're going to talk with Brian about Randall's Night 3, which was in a really awesome show. We're going to talk to Jake Cohen about C-Mac. We're going to talk to Matt Burnham about the DTE show, and then we're going to talk to Rob Mitchum and Kevin OK Deadhead Hansen about the three-night run in Chicago. We're just going to jump into those interviews and hope you all enjoy, and we'll see you next week with some more. So we're here with Brian, who is on Twitter at Wolfenhaus, H-A-U-S. Hey, Brian, how's it going?
Great. How are you doing?
Good, good. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. I'm excited to do it.
Yeah, it's great to have you on to talk about the third night of Randall's, which, you know, we're like halfway through the tour now, and it seems like that's unanimously sort of the best show, and I know that you have a lot to say about it, so we're excited to chat about it with you.
Sort of echo those same feelings, so I'm happy to sort of go into depth on anything like that. So
awesome. Well, start by telling us, so did you go to all three nights? Are you seeing other shows this summer? How does this fit into your sort of show going, either for the summer or for the whole year?
Well, I saw four shows. I saw opening night at Mansfield, and then one night I saw night three at SPAC, first night at Mann, and then third night at Randall's. It was kind of like I saw one show at every venue in the beginning of the tour.
Interesting.
Which is, I mean, I would have gone to more, but, you know, like I told you, I have three kids and a wife, and it's right. Like, you know, you got to try and negotiate what you can get and what you can't get.
So. Seems pretty good, though, actually.
Yeah, no, it worked out well.
You chose the right. You chose the right show.
Yeah, no, I mean, I got some crazy good jams and things that I hadn't, you know, just like the first night at Mansfield with the Harry Hood. That was just, I hadn't heard, you know, a jam like that, and I hadn't heard a jam like that, I don't know, forever. So it was definitely really some pretty, you know, nice, you know, also first night man with a big fuego. Like it was just a lot of sort of highlights that lucky I got to go to.
That's really awesome, man. Those are good shows. And so on Randall's, how did you get down there? Did you take the ferry? Did you walk? I think it's interesting how many different stories there are about traveling there.
Yeah. So I came in from Westchester because I was out all day, you know, and I got home just in time to like catch a train to 125th Street, and then I met my friend who I go to most of my shows with, and he was waiting in a cab, and like, he had just come from work, and so I hopped in this cab, and then we, you know, the cab took us over to Randall's, which was, you know, it cost a few bucks, but it was worth saving time because we were kind of late just because of the, you know, my other stuff had, everything else in my day had sort of drifted, so I got there sort of just in time to, you know, hear the first licks of sand when I walked in the gates. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, but it was in terms of, like, getting there, like, I'd never been to Randall's, even though I'm from New York, and I've lived and worked in Manhattan for ages, you know, years, but my first time at Randall's, and I thought it was really cool, because it was, you know, right by the river, and then, you know, when the sun went down, you see a nice view of the skyline, and it was... it kind of reminded me, I think other people mentioned this, like Bader Field, like in Atlantic City in 2012.
Yeah. Yeah, I was there.
Yeah, like a wide open spaces, you know, kind of a nice view everywhere, plenty of room to dance, plenty of like concession stands, you know, I had never had to wait for, you know, anything that I wanted to get, which was great. Also really chill security, which I was kind of expecting to be a lot worse, but it was, you know, everybody there was pretty cool in terms of, you know, just, it, you know, I didn't feel like I was going to get, you know, felt up for, you know, what I was when I went through the gate. Like, it was very chill, which I thought was really nice. And I think that one of the cool things about Randall's, and at least we got lucky with the weather, you know, every night, but Sunday night especially, it was going to pour, and it didn't, you know, happen until after the show ended, so it was, that was great.
Yeah, yeah. Seemed like it
and then
off.
getting off Randall's was actually really easy. I mean, we just went to the bus, and the bus took us to 125th, a free bus, you know, and then took us right to 125th Street, and then
nice.
We, you know, took a cab back to my friend's office and got his car and drove home. So it worked out real well.
That's great. And so you got there just in time for the show, which was which we should talk about. So you probably didn't get a lot of the pre-show stuff, either the lot or the scene in there.
I didn't really see the lot at all. And to the extent that it existed, I didn't get a chance to look at it. So.
Yep. And so that show, I mean, let's talk about it. It was pretty crazy. Second set. The first set was good. Had a few highlights. But what were your sort of takeaways from the first set before we talk about the second?
For me, I thought that Birds of a Feather was really jamming, like really, really, you know, fast and kind of. I liked that when they play that song really hard, and I thought that was really good. And I think other people have mentioned this also, but I thought the Runaway Jim was really, I love Runaway Jim.
Yep.
It's one of those songs that I heard back like in the early 90s when I first started.
Yeah.
And I love it, and it was like definitely a nice kind of, you know, interesting version that I hadn't heard in a while. So I thought that was definitely a big highlight for me.
Nice. Cool.
So yeah, I like that. I like, you know, I just, you know, the first set, you know, first opening, first set Sand, which is definitely, you know, I thought it was a nice sort of way to start the show, because I just, you know, I thought that was a nice, it was a short version, but you just never hear that in the first set, so it was definitely a nice way to start things off.
Yeah, nice.
I definitely think the Runaway Jim was my highlight. I love that song, so it was cool to get that nice version out of it.
That's great, and sort of mid-set, which is not typical.
Yep, yeah. Yep, for sure.
Cool, and then, so the second set, I mean, to my perspective, I wasn't there, but it took me probably three times listening through the first three songs of the second set. I had to listen to it three times before I really, like, understood what was happening there, so I can't imagine being there, but talk us through sort of your experience being there and then looking back.
I'll definitely try. I mean, sort of just one more, like, I thought the other thing about the first set that was sort of a great way to segue was the Split Open and Melt was, you know, kind of unique sound also, which I thought was really, you know, a little bit of a disjointed sound in the middle, which I thought was kind of cool. And then I think I kind of felt that again come out in, you know, in parts of the Chalk Dust jam. And, you know, it was one of those things where, like, I was tired, and then, like, all of a sudden Chalk Dust just, you know, it's one of those weird things that you can't explain unless you talk to another Fish fan, but, like, it sort of just took off, and it was like, oh my God, you know, this is, like, surreal, you know, how great this is, you know, like, it's, you know, I wasn't at Dick's 12, and, you know, the light, Dick's Light in 2012, which I think is probably similar in terms of, like, you know, the Golden Age Caspian light, you know, triple. Like, I sort of compare this, or like my all time favorites, one of the, like, 12697, like, you know, Tweezer, Isabella Twist, like, you know, the three song, when you get a three song run that's good, it's like, it's incredible, you know. It's like this peak that you just last for like an hour. It's incredible. So that's sort of where I felt like, you know, the Chalk Dust was amazing. And sometimes, you know, like, you get great 20-minute songs to open up the second set, and then it's kind of like an okay second set after that, but then just into, you know, like, sort of the you know, the segue right into Light, which was also mind-blowing, and then, like, and right into Tweezer, which I thought was, you know, kind of, I love the Tweezer also, and I love the way the Tweezer sort of ended, but bringing back the Tweezer, you know, the Tweezer riff at the end of it, you know, in kind of a different way, like, it is, you know, I loved all of that. So, like, it was one of those things where you're in the middle of it and you just cannot believe it's happened, you know. Right. And it, you know, it sounds like
that's why we go, you know, right?
Absolutely, no doubt, you know. And it doesn't compare to, I mean, as much as I love listening to, you know, live Phish sets that I download, like, it's not as, it just, you know, I don't know what it is. It's just that whatever that is, that essence of, like, being at a show and, like, being at, you know, a peak, like I said, this lasting for so long, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, man. The Tweezer had like a peak, like a Tweezer peak, which is not, you know, doesn't always happen these days. I feel like often it goes into, you know, funky or exploratory ways, but not like that, where it's just like a glorious peak, you know, which is
I totally agree. Like, it was, you know, a lot of times, like, you know, like in the New Year's 13 run, you know, like there was, I think the first night there was a Tweezer that was like, you know, cut short, and like it was just sort of, you know, it's always funky, like you said. Exactly what you said is a perfect way to explain it. You know, like a peak, mm-hmm. and the Tweezer that just, you know, I don't know. Like, I felt like every one of those three songs, like, it was just a uniqueness to them. And, you know, I also do think that, I mean, I know Miners talked about this on his blog, but like that the crowd on Sunday night was, I felt like it was a really, you know, crowd that was really into it, uh-huh. and really into the show, and sort of, I mean, obviously it's just a feeling, it's like I surveyed the crowd.
Right.
It was a very, yeah, but I felt like it was a very knowledgeable crowd, like a very, like really into it, really into the jamming, and really into the sort of the scene, and I think part of it was that it was so wide open, so that there was plenty of room to find like a spot that was comfortable.
Yep.
You know,
nice. And they definitely feed off that, right? I mean, there's no doubt that the band is feeding off of the good crowds versus the, you know, less good crowds, it seems.
Yeah. I would love to talk to them about that, like how they, you know, that sort of how that synergy works, like from their end, like how they feel, you know, because you can't really, again, like, I go back to the sort of the thing where you can't explain it, because, like, it was just, you know, I was expecting kind of, like, you know, Bader Night 3 was, like, a kind of a bad night, you know, it was, like, there was a great first show and a great mm-hmm. second show, mm-hmm. but, you know, the third show was kind of, like, whatever, I never listened to it, and, you know, I know Northerly last year was, like, there was some, you know, it was, like, and this year, I didn't listen to the Northerly shows this year, but, I mean, it was just one of those things where sometimes you think like a third night show sometimes will, you know, just kind of peter off or whatever. And it just, you know, it was like a confluence of like perfect situation with a great crowd, a really great venue, the weather holding up, and, you know, a great lighting. I mean, the lighting was unbelievable as always. I mean, and it's interesting, I was sort of re-listening to second set just now before we talked, and I was sort of seeing a couple of really highlights that I thought. First, that I felt like Mike's bass was, I felt like I could hear his bass a lot more. Maybe that's just, again, like a, you know, subjective thing, but I felt like I could really hear bass rhythms, you know, driving kind of the songs, and I thought that was, I really like, I mean, Mike's one of my favorites, so, like, I really like that. I think also on the live Phish, like, the mix that, you know, the studio, the soundboard mix, it just had a lot of really good bass coming out, so I really like that. Nice. I saw some interesting parallels. Like, I felt like I heard some of the, like, last year's Merriweather Light, you know, whether it's Start-Stop Light and Merriweather 13, like, I felt like I got some of that in the middle of the Chalk Dust. There was sort of that feeling, even though it wasn't stop-start, but it felt like some of the same kind of feel to it.
Yep.
You know, and, you know, I don't know, like, I really felt like it, like, Mike drove a lot of that Chalk Dust in terms of this really good, you know, rhythms that were underneath everything that were sort of keeping things going, and I you know, that's sort of a highlight for me that I sort of pinpoint in the Chalk Dust, that sort of really sticks out in my mind, as opposed, you know, obviously everything else, but that's just sort of what I think about. Nice. You know, like I think about, like, in the first line at Mansfield, like I felt like, you know, Fishman's drumming was just, I thought really kept things going and really was really, really, you know, important. And I sort of felt that about Mike and the light, in the Chalk Dust for the second set at Randall's.
That's cool. Yeah, that's great. So, this is, this is an amazing show you got to see. I'm actually going to go listen to it again after this. It's just, I don't think you can listen to it too many times, you know?
I agree.
Which is an amazing thing.
I agree. I don't know what it was. I really wish, like, you could capture that essence and, like, it, you know, but great. I mean, a Slave always, a lot of times, obviously finishes a set, but, like, I thought it was a standard Slave, but it was a really, you know, it was just sort of whimsical, like, fantastic. And I know sort of backwards, you know, Number Line gets kind of poo-poo it sometimes, but I've grown to, like, love that song.
Yeah.
And, you know, seeing it, like, hearing it, like, in an encore was different, and then, you know, with a crazy tweet bias at the end. So, like, I know people, it's, like, sort of takes the wind out of the set sometimes, but I don't know, like, I'm kind of partial to that song, so I like it, you know, and it's interesting to hear it as an encore also in my mind, so.
Yeah, well, so, you caught a hell of a show, and thanks for sort of sharing your memories of it.
No, I really appreciate it. I'm so excited to get the opportunity to talk about it, because it's just, you know, usually I just talk about it with my friends, and it's nice to sort of get those feelings and emotions out and try and put them into words so that other people can, you know, understand it, or at least get an essence of it.
Yeah, so. Definitely. And the, like you said, capturing the essence, I mean, that's why we go back, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, it's one of those pet peeves of mine, because people are like, why do you go, you know, obviously so many fans, like, why do you get, you know, why do you go to another shows? Why do you go to see all these shows? Aren't they all the same? And I'm like, it isn't, and I can't explain it to you unless you go to a show, you know? Like, it's just, talking about it doesn't, you just can't explain what it is. And then you go to a show, like, and then you hit a show like Randall's, and you're like, oh my God. You know, I just got blown away by an hour's worth of, like, music that was just, you know, out of the blue and, like, created out of nowhere, and, you know, this awesome, like, thing that's just, like, you know, it's only there for, like, a short time, and then it's, you'll never hear it again in that same way, you know.
That's why we keep going. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thanks for joining us, Brian. It was fun to talk.
No, thanks very much, and I thank you for doing this kind of stuff and taking your time out of your schedule to do this. It's really, really appreciated.
Cool, thank you. We appreciate it.
All right, great. Talk to you soon.
Okay, take it easy. Hey, so I'm here with Jake, who is on Twitter at Smooth Atonal Sound, Smooth Atonal SND. Hey, Jake, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's good to be here.
And we're going to talk about the show that you saw at CMAC. Tell us a little bit about, you know, was that the first show of the tour? Were you catching some more? How does that fit into your schedule? And also, what was it like kind of in the lot before the show and all that?
Yeah, it was actually me and my wife saw 5 shows in 7 days. And that was the last of the 5 shows we saw. We live in New York, so we saw the second night of the Mann Center. And then we saw all 3 Randall's shows, and then we decided to go up to CMAC, just in part because we had never been there before and seemed like it could be ripe for one of those sort of snooze-you-lose, midweek, you know, middle-of-nowhere throwdown shows. But it was the last show we saw, and we had just come off the Randall's run, so things were, expectations were kind of at a, you know, ridiculous level just because of the way that Randall's had ended up there.
Yeah, definitely. And what was it like there, the sort of pre-show scene? What's the venue? I mean, the venue's sort of famous in fish lore, but what was it like? What was it like there that day?
Yeah, it was, I had read a lot of accounts that there was no, there would be no scene, and that there would be, like, a lot of cops walking around busting vendors and stuff. And we got there, and it was just classic Shakedown Street. Like, everything was just totally
awesome.
Like, you know, your typical summer lot scene. No hassles, big Shakedown setup, lots of vendors, lots of good food, lots of cool merchandise. And it was, it's a nice sort of, you know, it's right in the middle of the wine country there. And so there's all, in the venue itself, they sell, I think it was bottles of wine. I saw people walking around with 24-ounce cups full of wine.
Wow.
which is really kind of funny. And also it's like, oh, this is going to be a bit of a shit show. But and the venue itself is, you know, tiny compared to most of the other sheds that they play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's much narrower than Great Woods or Spac, mm-hmm. or the Man even. And so much narrower. The lawn is very small. And it all has this very sort of old sort of, you know, we were joking that it was like the wine. It feels well aged in there.
Nice.
And the venue itself, the sound in there, though, was left a little bit to be desired. It felt a little echoey, but the scene was really cool.
Nice. And what about the music? I know there's been some talk. I don't know if you've been... I know you're like sort of in the wilderness, so maybe you haven't seen it, but there's been a lot of talk about whether those two or three shows in between Randall's and Chicago were met expectations. So what were your thoughts?
Well, you know, expectations is sort of a weird term after the third night of Randall's, because that was really, I mean, you know, people are saying silly things like best ever and whatnot. I mean, for me, it was definitely, you know, one of the best shows I've ever seen, you know, and certainly something that I'm sure will remain in a lot of people's, you know, sort of listening repertoires for a long, long time. I don't think anyone was expecting that we would get that again, but I think that people were sort of feeling as though that momentum of, you know, throwing down something like that first set bathtub gin and at the Friday night show, or the Carini Ghost wingsuit from Saturday, or everything from Sunday, but especially that Choctaw Light Tweezer, that sort of spirit of just going for it with the exploratory improvisation would sort of continue on. And, you know, I mean, I've listened to the Chicago shows. I listened to some of the Pine Knob show, and obviously the CMAX show that I was at. And you know, it didn't quite go there, but there were definitely some really solid things to report back on. The Disease was, you know, that's the big jam from that show. You know, the set two opener, obviously, and you know, it exceeded about 20 minutes, I think, on the official timing on the Live Fish.
Yeah.
And you know, the band released it as their video from the night. So that was definitely like the improvisational sort of high point of the show. Really, you know, different than the Friday night Down with Disease from Randall's. Those two sort of make a nice juxtaposition. The Randall's one sort of did that thing that Disease does sometimes, where it goes into a minor key and gets a little bit soft and quiet and spacey, and then they built it back up with this big major key jam that sort of exploded at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And the CMAC version didn't do that so much. It stayed in its type one jam a little bit longer, and it sort of went into this quieter territory, but it was definitely still in that sort of major key, and then it went into a few different kinds of jams after that. So it did that thing that, you know, there's been two kinds of type two jams this tour, I think, like the ones that sort of build on a melody from Trey mainly, and then the ones that are sort of like, we're going to explore this little groove pocket, and now we're going to move to this little groove idea. It was more of the latter kind.
Got it. Yeah.
But that was, I mean, it was certainly a good Disease. I don't think when we look back on this summer, it'll be the best Disease, but it was definitely fun. Definitely gave everyone a taste of sort of thing that they are capable of doing right now. The first set was really just awesomely fishy. You know, it opened with Buried Alive, which anytime that happens, that's, you know, that's going to be a good thing.
Yeah, that's a cool, yeah, cool opener. I mean,
yeah, and, you know, it's always fun to hear something that you haven't heard in a while. They're just, you know, with everything in that first set just sort of felt like it had a nice sort of fishy, you know, mm-hmm. arc to it. A good combination of old and new. You know, there's a Haley's in there. There was a twist, a first set twist, which was kind of fun. A first set gin, which again was not at the levels of the previous Friday first set gin, but right. It was good rockin' type one gin. I actually thought my favorite part of that was actually the wombat from that that first set, which
nice.
got into some weirdness towards the end. It didn't go type two the way that we know it can now, but but it definitely you know, it was longer than pretty much every version of Tube from the last, you know, 5 years. And I think that's crazy. Sort of, they're sort of transferring that, like, that funk jam that they used to do on Tube, that spirit has sort of found a place in Wombat. And they're stretching it out a bit. And then that was really cool to hear. The Bowie was pretty standard. The gin was pretty standard. But obviously that means they were both excellent.
Right.
And, the second set, the one thing that I would say is definitely must hear that you wouldn't necessarily pick up on paper is the seg from Get Back on the Train into NICU was just fantastic.
Nice. Yeah, I remember.
And they really just sort of moved seamlessly from the sort of upbeat strumming of Get Back on the Train right into the upbeat strumming of NICU, and Fishman picked up on the beat change pretty quickly, and he managed to sort of go right into there.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
It was a good, I remember listening back, I thought it was a good show. It was fun to listen to. I know that,
oh, sure.
You know, there were, we can't expect them to do Randall's every night, right?
Exactly. And, you know, if they hadn't just done Randall's, we would be saying that C-Mac was like, you know, a stellar show maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, the other thing that I was actually, and this is just totally sort of circumstantial to my experience, but I got to ride the rail for the first time ever for the second set of C-Mac. So, you know, I had to listen back before I did this podcast because I wanted to make sure that I heard it sort of in an unadulterated way, because it was, you know, that experience just sort of changed my whole perception of the music entirely.
Yeah. Nice. Because cool. You were just so much. Yeah. What was so different?
I mean, if you've never done it, you know, I think it's something that every sort of fan should get a chance to do. Obviously that's not possible necessarily, but you know, for us, it was, we just sort of managed to finagle our way in with the help of some friends who were down there. And, you know, the C-Mac rail is actually on the level with the stage, so you're just looking right at the band. There's no one between you and the band. Awesome. And I think everybody, you know, regardless of all the, you know, oh, Trey looked at me, or, you know, Mike was looking right at me and we thought something together, you know, right. All that bullshit aside, like, you can tell that the band is looking at you and sees you. And, like, you know, Trey has always said, you know, he's looking out in the audience and he's picking people out and he wants to, like, get them off. And
yeah,
Age is always saying, you know, I want to make sure people on my side are having a good time. It's like, yeah, they're looking right at you. And it's really cool. It's a great sort of way to experience a show. And it totally takes you out of the normal show going experience. And of course the energy is just, you know, sky high there.
That's awesome. Yeah. I haven't done it since I think 98, but it's a totally different experience. Well, thanks for joining us and for sharing your experience. It was fun to hear about.
You're welcome. Yeah, and the one other thing, I know we were finishing up, but the one other thing I wanted to mention is the Fuego Lope with all the Fuego teasers.
Oh yeah, that was just,
that was sort of the fun highlight of the night, was just hearing Fuego. That was when they started doing that trend that they've done now where they're teasing Fuego all the time.
Everything, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was just all over that antelope, and Trey even said Diego instead of Marco Escuandola, so that was really fun.
Yeah, they're doing it pretty, like, self-consciously at this point.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
It was unironic that, you know.
Yeah.
It was cooler when we heard it, man.
Right. Well, thanks a lot for joining us, Jake. This is interesting to do for us, and hope you had fun too. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, lots of fun. Thanks a lot.
Cool. And that's Jake, who is at Smooth Atonal SND. Cool. Talk to you soon, Jake.
Thanks, man.
All right, so we're here with Matt Burnham, who's joined us before, who is on Twitter at The Real Burnham. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing well, man. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for joining us and sharing your perspective on the show with us.
Yeah, happy to do it.
And so we're talking about the show at DTE, which I was surprised that you were going to, given that you live in Texas. And tell us just how you ended up going to that one show.
Well, I kind of, I don't want to say pulled a fast one on my wife. My wife's from the greater Detroit area, and we were planning a trip to visit her family, and we booked it after the fish dates were announced. So I was like, hey, if we put it around, you know, the 16th of July, then, you know, we could swing this fish concert in there as well. And she was happy to oblige, thankfully. And, you know, that's how we ended up there.
That's awesome. Good for you. I think probably many of us have done the not quite pulling a fast one on our wife to go to fish show. So,
yep.
Well done. So you were sort of up there visiting family, and what was the scene like there pre-show and in the lot and all that?
Well, we didn't spend a lot of time in the lot. We got there pretty close to when doors were opening. My wife and I are actually coming up on our 1 year wedding anniversary. So we wanted to make sure we got in because she was getting me the poster for an anniversary gift.
Okay.
So we saw the poster announced earlier in the day. We thought it looked really cool. We wanted to make sure we got one of those. So we went in pretty close to when doors were opened. But then after that, the venue, you know, DTE Pine Knob is amazing. There's so many like craft beer options and so many, it's like a cool bit of like wooded, kind of enclosed area.
Awesome.
So we just spent the first like hour just kind of wandering around, checking out the lawn, looking at different things. And it was really, really empty, I remember, like right until the show started, which means a lot of people were probably just hanging out in the lot because the pavilion did get like full right after the show started itself. Mm-hmm.
And how was the show? I mean, a lot of people were this week on Twitter, at least, talking about the quality of the midweek shows. So what was your take on the music?
Yeah, and I can see that. I know that I tweeted out after the show that, you know, the concert on a whole maybe didn't have that signature jam that has been prevalent in the first half of the summer tour. Like there was no, you know, 20-minute Fuego or, you know, 28-minute Chalk Dust or, mm-hmm. you know, anything like that. But I remember just, although, like, I think only the Ghost went over 10 minutes at the Detroit concert, it just, everything, like, flowed well, I thought.
Nice.
Everything actually, you know, everything was kind of short, but everything was played well. It's Ice was awesome in the first set. Yeah, the huge funky breakdown from Paige.
Yeah, that's great.
That was definitely like the first set highlight, but this was also my first time kind of being introduced to the Fuego songs live. So every time they played like Devotion to a Dream,
cool. Yep.
Or like Waiting All Night coming out of Piper, I was like, all right, cool, it's like the first time for me. And then, you know, you get to see that brand new, which is always fun.
Yeah, that's great, because you didn't see Halloween or the MSG shows.
Nope, missed those ones completely.
Got it. Cool. So you got to see several. What Devotion to a Dream, and had you seen Yarmouth Road before?
I had not seen Yarmouth Road. I had seen The Line at Jazz Fest.
Okay. Yep.
First Fuego, first Waiting All Night, and those are all, you know, like the first time you see a show in concert, or sorry, the first time you see a song in concert, you know, it's kind of like an important thing because then it's, you know, it feels more real to me at least.
Yeah, definitely. And did you feel like they were kind of, I guess I listened to it once the next day, I guess as I do every time, but as I'm sure you do too. Did you feel like in the second set they were sort of continued to search for things? Because there are like so many huge songs in that second set. Did you feel that way, or what was your take on this sort of, you know, shorter but many, many of the big songs?
It did kind of feel like a greatest hits kind of thing. Like when they open up with mics, you know, everyone's anticipation goes mm-hmm. to, is this the mics that's going to blow up? Is this going to be the, you know, second jam version? The segue into Ghost is really cool. Yeah. I remember that Ghost is the only thing that kind of really stretched its legs. Now, as to your question, though, I kind of felt like maybe it was more instead of like searching for like a theme, or searching for like, you know, where they could like, you know, really kind of get out there, that, you know, some of these midweek shows, some of these ones that are, I mean, Detroit's not a small market by any stretch, but, you know, for Fish itself, it might be a little bit smaller mm-hmm. than like a Saratoga mm-hmm. or Chicago. It gave people an opportunity who, you know, might only be going to one or two shows to see a lot of the songs they like. So although there wasn't like, you know, the 20, 25 minute long version of Tweezer, you know, you got a Tweezer, you got a Mike song, you got a Ghost, you got a Piper, you know, you got all the, you got the Fuego, the new song, you got, you know, a Wolfman. So all the songs that people like really enjoy hearing, you know, even though they're in short and condensed forms, you still got to hear them. You still got to see them. So that was a kind of a cool thing, I think. Maybe for people who weren't going to a lot of shows.
Yeah. And I think the tendency of the people who go to a lot of shows is to try to string together, like, you know, this show compared to the last show compared to the next show. And it's sort of like, you know, for a lot of people, one show is just one show and then that's it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there might be people with families who live in, you know, the greater Michigan area who for whatever reason couldn't swing northerly. This might have been the one show they could go to. So, you know, seeing some of the big hitters, even though they're short, you know, there's positives and negatives to that.
Yeah, and what was your sort of the highlight of the show musically for you?
So the Ghost was awesome. I think that's probably like the, in my opinion, one of like the big like takeaways. I think they've been playing the hell out of Ghost on this whole tour. But surprisingly enough, the Backwoods on the Number Line had a cool effect from Trey. I'm not like one of the big music, you know, analysts or music,
right.
You know, who can talk about different modes and keys and things, but there's some really interesting kind of darker sounding like tones from Trey. And, you know, that's not really normal for that song because it's, you know, usually more upbeat and kind of like, you know, cheerful. Also, the encore I thought was awesome. The first 2001 encore that the band's ever had.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And the Possum actually was extremely well played too. It actually reminded me of like an earlier Possum. I've been listening to about a 93 recently, and it sounded kind of similar to that. Like, had this weird, like, quiet breakdown in the middle of it before it kind of, you know, came back with a huge closer.
Yeah, I didn't notice that, but I remember, I know the old versions you're talking about. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I mean, it's weird when you have a show highlights as, you know, Number Line and Possum, but, you know, that and It's Ice or it for me, really.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it goes. Cool. Well, thanks a lot for joining us to share your perspective on this, Matt. It's been good to reconnect and chat.
Yeah, it's been good, and I hope to see you guys out at Dick's.
Absolutely, 100%. Sweet. I'm here with Kevin, who is at OK Deadhead, and Rob Mitchum, who's at Fish Crit, two previous guests who were nice enough to come back on and talk about the Chicago shows. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Absolutely. So does that make us alumni, I guess? Now we'll be two-time distinguished alumni, eh?
Yeah, pretty much.
Nice. I feel honored.
Do you feel distinguished, Rob?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Perfect. So we're talking about Chicago, the three nights. You guys both, I know that Rob, you saw two of the three, and Kevin, you saw all three, right?
Yes, sir.
I know, right? Well, Rob, why don't you go first and talk about how this fit into your sort of summer tour plans and other shows you hit, because we were just talking about the DTE show before that, and then Kevin, you can pick it up from there.
Sure.
Yeah, so Fish, for the second consecutive year, made a like direct personal attack on my musical taste by booking the Chicago shows the same weekend as Pitchfork Festival, which are basically my two favorite weekends of the year, and they forced me to choose between the two. Last year I did Pitchfork during the day and Fish every night, and that combined with the terrible weather we had last year just about killed me. So I decided to be a little more reasonable.
That makes two of us.
Yeah, exactly. So I was a little more conservative this year and decided to do Friday at Fish, Saturday at Pitchfork, and Sunday did both.
Wow.
To
replace the Saturday Fish show I was missing, I successfully lobbied to go drive myself up to Pine Knob and see that show. So I got a bonus show in the middle of the week. So, and those are my three for the summer.
Nice. Right. What about you, Kevin? What's your summer? You started off on the East Coast, right, and saw a few at the beginning?
I started out, did my SPAC run, as I call it. Love that. It's one of my favorite runs I've hit last 3 years, I think.
Nice.
Just fantastic weekend. I mean, never lets me down. And then I did the Man shows, Philly. First shows I've ever seen at the Man. So that was cool. Fantastic. And then, I went back home, and I got normal for a couple weeks, and actually about a week, and then flew up to Chicago this past weekend.
Nice. That's awesome. And are you guys seeing more shows this summer? Kevin, you're going to Dick's, right?
Yeah, I'm normal for 4 weeks, 5 weeks, and then I go get unnormal at Dick's.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to seeing you there. Rob, are you hitting any more?
No, this is it for me, and based on the tour dates today, probably for the year.
Yeah, what do you guys think of those dates?
Fantastic.
Fantastic.
I mean, of course, it's screwy Fish logistics. I mean, if you really look at it, but you know, of course they're probably trying to shake the trees. You know, but it's, I mean, Sugar, that looks I mean, it's setting up to be a prime fall. There's no doubt about that.
Good shows. And are you going to try to catch a few of those, Kevin?
Yeah, definitely. I'm not sure exactly which. Definitely Vegas, probably, and then we'll kind of go from there. But I'll definitely pluck a handful out, no doubt.
Nice. And Rob, you don't think you'll make it to any?
Yeah, it doesn't look good. Yeah. I might put in a Halloween request and just let, like, tickets by mail decide for me. See if I hit the lottery. But, yeah, I mean, it looks like it's going to be a great run, and the venues look really cool, and I'm looking forward to couch touring it, I guess.
Yeah.
And maybe thinking about Florida if that does, in fact, happen. So
let me ask you this. What do you think the hardest ticket's going to be? Santa Barbara?
I think Vegas has got to be, right? It's a weekend, Halloween, Vegas, first time in 10 years. Like, I'm glad that I can't really go, because it's going to be a nightmare, I think.
Guaranteed a costume set, so, yeah.
Yeah.
It looked like it was only going to be two sets from the ticket price. I thought that was the hot rumor today.
Oh, really? I didn't see that.
It's the same ticket price as the other shows.
Yeah, it's $60, isn't it?
Yeah. So I think, and they gave that Rolling Stone interview where they suggested they wanted, like, to change the tradition.
So I don't know.
Man.
I love Twitter.
Exactly. So this is pretty interesting. I don't know if I'm gonna see any of this fall. I'm hopefully gonna make at least one or two of the Bill Graham shows, but that's a long shot even right now.
But I tell you what, those shows are fantastic. That GA, I mean, I think that's the only show that's full straight GA this fall.
Man,
and that, I'm telling you what, it's cool.
Yeah, I'm going to try to do it. I'm going to try to fabricate a work trip, see what happens. So I'm about to go see my first shows of the tour at Meriwether this weekend, but let's talk about these shows that you guys saw. I'm pretty jealous that you guys were at these shows. Maybe we can just talk a little bit about each night. You know, the weather was fine, and the weather all worked, so that's good. What did you guys think going in Friday night?
I got there pretty late, both Friday and Sunday, and didn't really get to take in the scene very much. But, I mean, I got to say, like, you know, people kind of hated the venue from last year, and it was sort of hard to separate out how much of that was just the weather and the, like, fact that that is a temporary venue and has no shelter at all. And whether or not they mismanaged evacuating on Friday is another debate. But with the perfect weather we had here this weekend, it was actually really nice, I thought. The setting is perfect with the lake right there. It's like, it's beautiful at night. The skyline is right there. I was lucky enough to be in the front pit for both of my shows. So I still have no concept of what it's like taking it in from the lawn at that place. But
nice.
Other than that, I think that the sound is good, and it feels huge, because you kind of can't see the back of it compared to Pine Knob, which felt like this really nice contained almost miniature shed. With the really mild slope you have at Northerly, you can't see the back of the lawn or even really the front of the lawn from the pit, so it just feel like you're in this big mass of people.
Nice. What about you, Kevin?
Yeah, well, I mean, weather was fantastic. I mean, we could not have lucked out anymore. I mean, it was unreal. And but I tell you what, I mean, you can quote me on this. I love that venue. I'm a big fan. I've gone I went last year as well. And that venue just sets up great. I mean, I dig it. I mean, it's low key inside. Security's cool. You know, there's I sat in the terrace for the first time. I've always been in the GA on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
But Saturday night, I sat in the terrace right there in 302, section 302. And man, oh man, those were some great seats.
Cool.
The venue itself, I think it's a great location for those guys. You know, there's not a lot of vending because there's not a lot of parking lots. But, I mean, it's fantastic. It's cool. Right on the water. Nice.
That's awesome. Well, that's good. I'm glad that it, like, sort of redeemed itself from last year, because I feel like people were a little down on it last year. But what about the first night, Friday, What did you guys think of the show? What were some highlights? What were some takeaways that you guys had?
Well, I kind of laughed at the first set because I've been like trying to get this hashtag save the first set thing going on Twitter to try and like jog them into actually doing something worthwhile in the first set, which seemed like it was maybe starting to happen on this tour. And then I joked at DTE that it was the first settiest first set ever. And then like they topped it Friday night in Chicago because I gotta actually run the stats on if they've ever played Bounce and Sparkle and Sample all in one set before.
Or yeah, like, there were like a lot of those.
At least, yeah. So, I mean, it had a Reba and a Stash, and both were, like, fine, but it was like, man, this is a real first set right here. And it was like, I felt like they were, again, personally attacking me for the hubris to question their methods. but then the second set I thought was, like, fantastic, and I thought it wasn't even like the kind of set where you could pick an easy highlight. It very much felt like it had as much flow, at least, as any other set this tour. Maybe I think it was the second night of SPAC had a really nice run of songs and felt really cohesive. But this set, I thought, just like kind of top to bottom, had just the right dynamics for a Phish set, which is, you know, a pretty rare thing for 3.0, actually.
Dude, how about the seg, the crowd, when the seg into Halley's Comet? Was that the second night?
That was Friday.
That was Friday. Dude, did that not drop out of the sky? Nobody knew that was coming.
And that was a full-on segue, right?
Yeah, and like another like geeky stats thing. I don't think I can ever remember a like true segue into Halley's Comet.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. I mean, I'm telling you, that dropped out of absolute nowhere. I even think for them, sort of, it seemed like. Trey just started singing the lyrics over the current. That was crazy.
Yeah, if you guys
once started singing it, that crowd went nuts.
Yeah, I was watching on the webcast, and it actually was like he just kind of walked up to the mic and started singing. Like, I don't think any of the rest of them really knew what was going on.
Right. It took Fishman about 3 or 4 seconds. Yeah, and then he drops right into it. Yeah.
And Mike completely forgot to do the like beatbox basic thing, except for like a few, like during the bridge, I think he remembered to do it again. But yeah, it gave it like a totally different feel, I thought. Like,
oh yeah, no
the
doubt.
The rhythm section was like a lot different, and then that awesome sort of like anti-climax after the vocals was really cool, I thought. And like another really good segue into Wombat.
And that's what's so great about this tour, I think, really, is it you know, well, it goes back to a lot of things, but man, their song placement, I mean, you know, you can bash them for this, that, and the other, you know, people were bitching about the theme the other night, you know, but I tell you what, I mean, their song placement nowadays, I mean, you don't know what's coming. You don't have a clue.
Yeah.
I mean, I looked at, you know, Sunday, opening up Gumbo, Jim, Tila, I mean, come on. Really? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, who called that?
Right. Right, or open up with Sand and the third night of Randall's, right? There's just like some crazy stuff. Well, I don't know about you guys, but from that whole weekend, before the Sunday night show, which we'll get to, but the first two nights, like the Wombat is like the most intriguing thing to me. I just feel like I've listened to it so many times. What was it? Were people like freaking out? Were you guys surprised?
Well, I walked out of there and I was not a Wombat fan. But I walked out of there being a Wombat fan.
Yeah.
It was that good. That was a great moment.
What do you think, Rob?
Still say, like, people don't agree with me, but I still say there was like some type of wheel jam in there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that, but I'll listen to it again.
About the 5-something-minute mark, give or take. It's kind of like the Paradise City argument, maybe. You know.
Right.
But either way, I mean, that was a great Wombat.
Yeah, like, I think it was a good argument for what having a really good set flow can do to songs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it felt really natural coming out of that Wombat to have this really melodic, sort of unexpected peak jam. And it was one of those sets that felt like a continuous jam with some islands of songs popping up here and there. And so it seems unfair almost to call it Wombat. Like in the old days when I kept a set list, I probably would have written Wombat into Jam.
Uh-huh.
And Chicago Wombat Jam.
Yeah, exactly. Northerly Jam.
Yeah, Northerly Jam.
But, you know, listening back, at the show, I thought the Wombat was the most interesting thing, and, like, I think partially because it was so unexpected and exciting. But listening back, I really like the Golden Age a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think it hasn't got talked up as much because it was, like, yet another solid Golden Age. But not only did it set the tone for the rest of the set and sort of create this sort of party funk thing that they kept coming back to the whole night, I think it's a lot like the Hartford version from last fall, where there's some really interesting dynamics going on, where it doesn't move that much. It's not like one of these really mercurial sort of jams like the Spack Chalk Dust or something. It kind of stays in one mood, but it sort of like dies down really nicely at one point, and then it hits this really nice like noise peak towards the end. And I just thought it felt like a really nice just precision like rhythm experiment for the whole time, and it's pretty long. It might have been the longest jam the whole weekend.
Nice, yeah. Yeah.
It's 1704.
Yeah. Pretty solid.
And it right into like a perfect mango, too. I didn't think they knew how to play mango anymore, to be honest.
And I think what I thought that was a great. I mean, stick that mango. Yeah, and who saw that coming, eh? Yeah, nobody. I thought that was a good. That second set, I mean, from start to finish, in my opinion, is pretty solid.
Yeah, and you guys, so on the second night, so Rob, you skipped the second night to go to Pitchfork Fest, right?
Yeah, I went and saw, it was the night headlined by Nutrimuppetel.
Okay, they're coming to DC this weekend, and so before we go to the Saturday Night Fish show, how was that show?
Yeah, it was good. There was a lot, kind of what I expected, and thinking back, it was a pretty interesting contrast to seeing Fish on either side. Mm-hmm. It was an interesting sandwich. Given that Nutrimuppetel's last album was 1998, and they really have no new material since then, so
crazy.
It was kind of funny to see this like critically acclaimed band that was playing, you know, 16-year-old songs,
and they're selling out everywhere. I saw them at Kansas. It was so packed, I couldn't even breathe in that place in February.
Yeah. Wow. And at Pitchfork, of course, it was kind of like the peak of what they've been working for at the Pitchfork Festival. They've been trying to get the Nutrimuppetel or Mangum for years. And so that was kind of nice as like a symbolic thing, but it, you know, it left me kind of cold compared to like what I was getting the night before and the night after, which I kept to myself when I was talking to other people.
Sure. Yeah, you got a reputation to uphold.
Well, my reputation now is the guy that likes fish. So
yeah, perfect.
I don't have to worry about that anymore.
Who goes to see Neutral Milk Hotel instead, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man, that's what we all are known as to someone. So, Kevin, how was the second night for you?
Second night was great. I started out, I went to Pete Mason Fan Arts exhibit in the Congress Hotel that afternoon, and proceeds went to Mockingbird.
Yeah.
And Isidore Bullock was there. It was, I mean, fantastic. He probably had 25 vendors, give or take. And it was a neat deal. So I want to throw a thank you out there to Fan Art.
Nice.
Yeah, for everything that you do for everybody within the fish community.
That's awesome.
That's cool. Yeah, and we rolled right from there over to Northerly, and second night was fantastic. I'll tell you, bottom line, I keep going back to that hood, that Harry Hood.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the Halley's Comet, the Piper Halley's Seg, and the Harry Hood, the peak of the Harry Hood, were probably the loudest I've heard the crowd this weekend.
Wow, cool.
That hood, I think, is just bang up. I mean, that's hot, real hot.
Yeah,
Rob, what do you think, Rob?
Yeah, like I haven't dug that deep into the show, but the hood was great. I mean, I was pretty satisfied by my shows this week, but the one thing I'm mad about is that I missed this like Harry Hood renaissance.
Yeah,
that's going on this summer.
It was a renaissance, but I tell you, the other funny thing about this weekend. I mean, we hear teases all the time. But, man, it sure seemed like a tease fest this weekend. And they are teasing. You know that this is the summer of Fuego. Because I bet you teased that shit 10 times.
Yeah.
The whole weekend. Easy. I mean, insane. It's like, oh, there's Fuego again.
Yeah. Fuego. It was like in everything, right?
Right. Exactly.
Well, so the the Hood. So like my one question, I was listening to the Hood I think yesterday, and I was thinking, I really love the like I love the traditional Hood because it allows for so much building up of like emotive sort of guitar from Trey and you know, and so with these you get like more exploration and that's great, but I'm wondering if they keep doing it, if I'm gonna end up missing or if we're gonna, you know, pine for a classic Hood, you know.
Oh yeah, well I tell you what, they're on mark to get. I mean, that one I heard, now that was not as good as the Holly Hood, however, last summer.
Yeah,
in my opinion, but it was still pretty damn hot. I'd have to listen to them side by side.
I still think the Mansfield Hood is the best.
Nice. Yep, that was good.
Yeah, that was the best one I've heard in this. Yeah,
give me the Man Fuego any day.
Nice. Yeah, the Fuego. This is the summer Fuego for sure. I mean, definitely gonna get at least one this weekend at Merriweather.
Oh yeah,
maybe more counting all the teases.
Yeah, you like it too. Watch out.
So, I kind of did hope they played two that like in Chicago. I think that's like the inevitable end. Maybe at Dick's they'll play it every night.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, they're clearly having fun. I mean, there's no doubt, right? I mean that this is giving them the new material is giving them some new energy and some. Not that they didn't have energy last year, but it just feels like they're able to push a lot of different things in a lot of different directions, and they seem to be more comfortable. Maybe this year compared to where they were at this point last summer in the tour. I don't know.
I think it was possible to get re-energized more than they were last summer. But I think we're seeing that this summer as a whole.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you think about that, Rob?
I think as much as the Fuego songs have done that, and I was skeptical about this at first, but I think the like cover restriction is doing it, has been even more beneficial to them. And it Kevin was talking about songs popping up in unexpected places and, just sort of, you know, sort of putting you off balance as far as set construction and what's, you know, what is typical for an opener and what songs are going to be the big jam songs and that sort of thing, I think really does come down to the fact that they're only keeping covers for special occasions.
Yeah, and I don't remember the last time I was this off balance. Honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been a while, which I think is a good thing. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's funny.
But I'd like a few more covers, though, for the record.
Yeah. It's funny because I've seen people complain on Twitter about, like, repeats and you know, being predictable set lists. I think you see the same kind of, I mean, the songs you always see popping up, right? But
every album they've ever done, you always see this.
Mm-hmm.
You know. You see a lot of this. I mean, they released an album, you're going to hear, you know, Hoist, DWD, you know, it's just, it's kind of their thing, but so.
Yeah, it seems like a tighter rotation all around, too. Like, I saw two Pipers and two shows this week, which, you know, that's blasphemy.
Is that, that was two shows in a row, right?
Yeah, DTE and Friday Night each had a Piper.
Yeah.
But that doesn't count because it's different cities. Don't you read Twitter?
There's all sorts of rules, right?
Yeah.
Come on, dude.
Man, Pine Knob and Chicago are only like 4.5 hours apart. That's within the circle.
So now we're going to make hourly rules.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Well, so the third night, guys, was you guys were both there, and it was pretty insane. Particularly a couple of the jams in the second set, which either you guys jump in, what'd you guys think? What was the, how did the Sunday night sort of crowd and energy compare to the other nights and musically? What'd you think?
So I went to that show by myself. The person I was going to take fell through, which ended up being kind of like the perfect like headspace that I needed for that show.
Mm-hmm.
No offense to not meeting up, Kevin, but it was like, it worked out perfectly that I was my own and had no like self-consciousness about how like silly I got in the second half there. Yeah. But
so that's why you were late for your curfew that night?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it was, it felt very Sunday show to me. Like people, there was a lot more space than there was on Friday at least. And people a little less like partying, and like I don't know, it just like the first set, and again to like, you know, pay my debts for the save the first set thing. That one was actually like pretty awesome, I thought. And
I thought it was great.
Yeah, really good song choices and really interesting playing. And the Scent of a Mule was some nice, like, fishy weirdness that, like, we haven't seen enough of lately. And, yeah, I was really satisfied by the first set. And then the second set was, like, kind of took my head off. We can get to that.
Yeah. What was your take on the first set, Kevin?
Oh, same thing. I tell you, I thought they, I mean, came out, ripped into the gumbo. I mean, it was like party time down there. I mean, it was fun.
Nice. The yeah. Scent of a Mule had some weirdness, right?
Yeah.
What, and Rob, you were pretty close. What was it? Did it seem weird at the time that it was just, you know, all these different? I mean, I know that Fish got on the marimba, and there was all kinds of crazy stuff. Was it like? Was it pretty fun to watch?
The funny thing to watch was like even before they all got on the drums, Trey and Mike kind of like, without even talking, like came together and with their backs to the audience and like did this weird sort of like swaying look at Fishman while he was playing.
Oh, wow.
And the whole thing, I mean, I don't think they talked to each other the whole time. It was just kind of like this weird, like telepathic, like, hey, let's all go play the drums now. And it was really funny to watch Paige like eventually kind of like straggle over there.
That was the Marimba Lumina body signal.
Awesome. They're all hypnotized and like, yeah, getting closer to Fishman. I mean, it made the Marimba Lumina. I've seen other people say this, but every time Fishman plays it, it just makes me mad that they only use it as like a gimmick instead of a mule. Like, why aren't they doing insane noise jams with that and the theremin and the drill and like Trey doing all of his new Echoplex tricks and like, eventually that's got to happen, right? It's like.
Totally. We were saying that. It'd be so great to get a drum space with, like, Lumina going. You get Trey's Echoplex. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. It'd be your new 94 Bowie there, RJ.
Yeah, I like it. I like the idea. So, so the second set, guys, this is, I mean, to me, to everyone, I guess the Wedge was the most notable thing. Maybe the Ghost. I don't know what you guys think, but that was something I wanted to listen to like right away the next morning. What was your either of your takes on the second set?
I mean, I love the Ghost. Don't get me wrong, but you know, there was a lot of hype about the Wedge. But I mean, you know, and I see some people saying, oh, you know, Trey botched a lyric and all this stuff, and you know, I'm on the other side of the fence. I'm going to sit here and be critical about it. I mean, that was a fantastic Wedge.
Mm-hmm.
Crowd was pumped. I mean, it was great. It was a great moment in Fish, in my opinion. And then, I mean, they go, you know, do a Ghost right after that. I thought that was a wicked Ghost, didn't you, Rob?
Yeah. No, I thought, I'll admit I felt a little bit like the set was going like the DTE set when they started at Mike's.
Right.
And this is, you know, the danger of expectations, but like I expected that night to have just a big, deep tweezer. Like I thought it was, everything was set up for it. Like we had two party shows and we were going to have like the crazy, like SPAC Night 3 style.
Right.
Experimental tweezer jam for half the set. And so when they got into Mike's, I'm like, man, I don't think they're going to play Tweezer. Mike's doesn't go anywhere these days. And then they dropped into the Wedge, and I'm like, yeah, I like the Wedge, but they're playing it a lot these days, and it's going to be another songy set. And that's like, in a way, that's like perfect. Because then there was that, like, one of my favorite Fish things in the world, an awesome moment during the Wedge solo, traditional Wedge solo, when like all of a sudden everybody knows it's going somewhere.
Right,
it's like you can feel that ripple through the whole crowd, and it takes like 2 seconds. I don't know how it happens. It's just like the magic of Fish, right? Every time I hear it on the tape, still I get like chills. It's like they just, you know, they play one note you don't expect, and it's like, all right, it's on, and this is gonna get really weird. By the end of it, I mean, it was like, this is where I was happy I was by myself, because I just kind of like lost it more than I normally do at a Fish show with the very debatable tease/jam at the end of the Wedge, which I am now, I think I tweeted this right before we went on, but I am totally convinced that it's the REO Speedwagon song now.
Are you?
because it sounds like the strum pattern of Trey sounds exactly like it, and it's a song where the refrain is basically "keep on rolling" over and over again.
I tell you, I disagree. I disagree because there was probably 10 people around me, and some of which I didn't even know. They were just neighbors, and we were all like, "Paradise City, Paradise," the minute he went into it.
Yeah. But that's what my wife said, too, when we were listening to it tonight. But I think if I've learned anything, it's that REO Speedwagon should have sued Guns N' Roses. It's like the exact same chord progression.
That's hilarious. You know what's weird? I saw yesterday, though, and I don't know if this is total irony or total coincidence, but the Appetite for Destruction came out July 21st, 1987. So it was almost to the day. What is that, 24 years? To the day.
Well, hopefully they'll never tell us.
Yeah.
Controversies that Fishnet was born in, right?
Exactly.
The new Fire on the Mountain tease.
Well, the couple weeks ago we had Justin Bolognino on here, and he was just talking about his view of Fish, which I think is relevant here and similar to you guys. Yeah, he's great. And it's just like, you know, Fish is a mystery box, and you don't know like what it is. You don't, and ultimately we don't want to know, right? why we keep going back.
Expect the unexpected. I mean, that's Fish's mantra, and it's so true.
And they play it so perfectly. Like, they have one of the best like media management of any bands around, I think, because they know they don't need to give an interview that explains everything. And they love just like messing with us and giving us little like pieces of information that we can spin into like a big huge thing. And I mean, at this point, that's like second nature to them. But I love it. Everybody loves it.
Oh yeah. I tell you what is interesting. I thought actually I was looking today, and you can kind of take this and chew it, but I don't really even know if it means anything. But I thought it was interesting that Night 3 Chicago, it's got the most tunes that check in at 10 plus minutes this tour, and if you add the 9-minute first tube, that makes 5, which is 2 more than any other show so far this tour. So
wow,
I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. And like I want to talk about the Ghost. I much prefer the Ghost to the Wedge. I thought the Wedge was amazing and loved it. The Ghost is maybe my favorite jam I've seen since 3.0 started.
Wow.
And it just really like hits all my buttons as a Fish fan. And I like have been a huge proponent of the Echoplex and what it does to Trey's sound, and it's like been the most fun part of this summer for me has been watching all the different ways he finds to use it. And that was just like exactly what I wanted. Like, it was like 6 minutes of him on one chord.
Yep.
It just like looping over and over and over it. And like I don't know if you guys can hear on the live Fish, but like a firework goes off.
Yeah.
On point.
Trey.
Yeah, I know. It was like, right above my head, basically. I thought I was so far under the lights that I thought maybe a light had exploded. Like, it was, but it was like, it could have been more perfectly timed, as awful as it is if people are shooting fireworks at the band. It like worked perfectly because it was just like the intensity build of that jam, that like second half of the jam is like incredible to me. It reminded me a little bit of the Big Cypress Mics, which is a pretty bold comparison to make. And it's definitely not that dark and evil, because they can't really do that dark and evil anymore. But just their like patience to just stick and like pound on that one chord.
But I tell you, I think what kind of makes the Ghost was fantastic. But you tie in the Weak of Paw back into Ghost Jam.
Yeah.
That was incredible. And I'm not sure. Nobody saw that coming either.
No. Like, my eyes almost popped out of my head.
Oh my God, it's Ghost!
Yeah. No, that was like, the Weak of Paw was the perfect, like, punctuation on that. Actually, in the first tube, too, they were each an exclamation point on the Wedge Ghost, which was, I mean, that's one of my favorite segments I've seen, like, in this era of Fish. Easy.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah,
that's awesome. That's cool, guys. So what were your sort of brief sort of takeaways from the whole weekend, either musically or otherwise?
I tell you, I want to do a PSA real quick. Kids, don't bring fireworks to the show. Okay? And number two, I also wanted to bring up, I went on Sunday to Rick Hirsch's Screens and Suds. Jim Pollock was there. Of course, it was his 50th birthday this weekend. Mm-hmm. So it was great to run into him and chat with him. But Screens and Suds also had a poster show on Sunday, and all those proceeds went to Mockingbird. And it was a great turnout.
Nice.
Yeah, it was cool. Very cool. But it was just neat seeing all those people in town. I think Paige even said something about Jim's birthday the first night.
Yeah, he did on Friday. I remember it.
Yeah. And so it was a great weekend. Good music, good people. Like I said, I really dig that venue. The more I go there. And it was just a good weekend.
Awesome.
Yeah, I would like put it in the context with the whole summer tour so far, which some notable Fish critics have put down the weekend as not being up to snuff with the first part of the tour.
Yes.
I think so. Back in the video chat we did a few months ago, I said I was like kind of pessimistic about this summer, and I said it's going to be a transitional year. They got all this new stuff. It's not going to find a good place, and people should measure their expectations. And I think I was right that it was going to be a transitional year, but wrong about how awesome that could still be.
Uh-huh.
And I think this weekend really added a different flavor to a transitional year where they're not entirely sure which direction to go yet. And I think like the Randall's run and the Chicago run are two completely different like tones of Fish. Both are really fun, though. One was kind of was more focused on like the big, really long exploratory jams. Mm-hmm. And I think Chicago was where we saw, for, you know, one of the first times in a long time, more of a focus on set construction and finding jams in unusual places instead of predictable places.
Yep.
They weren't third quarter jams. They weren't, you know, jams and songs where you expected to see big jams. And, personally, I like both sides of Fish. I'm still, like, you know, maybe I would have enjoyed a 30-minute tweezer more than I enjoyed what I ended up seeing on Sunday, but I came away, like, totally satisfied, and I can't predict where the rest of the summer is going to go, to be honest. Like,
yeah, which is a great place to be, and that's exactly what I thought after the weekend. Like, there's so many compelling things to think about going into this weekend show for me, partially because I haven't seen shows, so it's just, you know, after listening to Mansfield and a couple SPAC shows, it was like I had to kind of readjust how to listen to Fish because there are these new songs in the rotation, new jamming styles a little bit. It was so, I feel like I finally figured it out. I don't know if you guys ever feel that way, but that's definitely the way I felt going into the summer tour.
I tell you one thing this weekend too is it, and I knew this kind of, you know, throughout the summer so far, but I tell you, Trey's rhythm guitar playing that day, oh my gosh, it's incredible. I mean, it's, you know, it's always been good, but I really think he's come leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about the wedge jam is that he avoids playing lead for so long. I get frustrated when he solos too much, you know, when it turns into just sort of Trey wank all over the set. But I was like over that Paradise City / Roll with the Changes jam. I was like begging him. I was like, you have to solo over this. This is so good. You have to solo over this progression. And then he finally did, but only for a little bit, and then did the Ghost, which was not really solo based at all. So right. He's like, he's really toying with us now, and I love it. It's great.
Rob, it's just like we've been bitching for what, the last couple of years about how they always quit in the third quarter.
Right.
And now they give us a rocking fourth quarter three nights in a row up in Chicago, and we're bitching about the fourth quarter.
Well, I'm not bitching about it. I love it. And
I bet it's classic Twitter. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You always complain about what you don't have at this moment.
Exactly.
Well, I'm really glad to hear, you know, Kevin, I know that you are an optimistic and an always enjoying Fish fan, and so I expected that you would come away from Chicago, you know, feeling that way, but I'm especially glad to hear that you, Rob, had a good time and that you're feeling sort of re-energized and satisfied with the shows you saw. It's awesome.
Heck yeah, man.
Cool. Thanks, guys, for joining us. This has been really, really interesting to talk and always fun to connect with you guys.
Yeah, Thank you, RJ. Rob, I appreciate it. Nice chatting with you.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, great talking with you. And thanks, RJ. It's great to be on.
Cool. Talk to you guys soon. Bye-bye.
Later.
2, 1, 2, 3, 4.